format and then a Bible study, which is what we do on the third week of each month, I've decided to go through this Bible study in two parts. I had a Bible study this last week in the Tampa congregation, and it was very well received, but I cannot go through it in just one portion. It's more involved than that, but it's an important topic, and you were asked to read the book of Ruth if you had time. Did any of you read or have you read the book of Ruth, if I could see your hands? Okay. Dennis and Joe, if you'd come forward. I have a handout for everyone. This is somewhat of a crib sheet to help you in this study. I intend to go through chapter 1, and then we'll take a break for sandwiches, and then we'll go through chapter 2 after that. It's a word study in Ruth, but I think you'll find it also pictorial of your calling and what God is doing for us. I brought along a few books in case questions arise. I have the New Wilson's Old Testament Word Studies. It's written by Bill Wilson, one of our deacons over in Vero Beach, right? Same name, different author. And I brought around Cruden's Complete Concordance, and it has every word in the Bible. And one of the three concordances that you'll find available are basic concordances. And if we need to find something, we can find it in there. And I brought, of course, my King James Version, my Standby Bible, and I brought along a Revised Standard Version, just in case some clarity can be had from a different translation. But let me start the activity of this study by asking any of you that raised your hands did any questions arise? We get, you know, they need some sheets back there. Anybody else need one? Now, you can use the back of the sheet for notes if you wish. We have just one left. Well, we got two left now. So we have some guests yet coming to the door. You can be ready for them, right? But those of you that had raised your hand having read it, did any of you have any questions that came up? I want to get a review of if there were questions that came up so we can see about answering them in the study time. A good question. I can answer that one in this discussion. Who else has questions? That's it. That's an important question. It's a foundational question to really understanding the book. Who wrote the book of Ruth? Well, does anybody know why, if you read all the way through, why the last few verses have all of those begats and begats and begats? Why is that there? You have a conclusion that it's the line of Christ. That is a good answer, but if there's more to be understood than that. What does Ruth mean? Anybody know what Ruth means? Well, I give you a sheet and you can check that. What's Bethlehem, Judah? You see? There are questions to have. So let's open our Bibles to the book of Ruth. And as you get there, you're going to find before it is Joshua, Judges, Ruth, then the books of Samuel. Well, while all of those books don't say who wrote them, they were written by Samuel. And it is important that you remember this as a foundational question. You find in Judges 1, verse 1, or Ruth 1, verse 1, this is when the judges ruled. And so that tells us the time frame. Now, Judges is the immediately preceding book. And if you look up your page to the last verse, 25, of Judges, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Now, when you think of the fact that this was written by Samuel, he did ordain David, oiled on his head, to be king. So Samuel is using various materials that are already understood and have been written, and he uses those to help him bring about this book. And then in the book of Samuel, he's also writing details from his own time frame. Now, when you see these words, every man did right in his own eyes, there's people that believe that what they did in their own eyes was right things. They did good things. Yet if you run through the book of Judges, there aren't a lot of good things. And in fact, the beginning of Ruth we'll find is somewhat troubling. And you'll find in Samuel, war. So it wasn't what was good in their own eyes was not good in God's eyes. And that's an important point. So we find on the study sheet, I note to you the first thing is Judges. And then the small middle column is the verse reference. And I've put some things in the study guide to be a reminder. But I'm going to tell you more than what is certainly in this study guide. When it says they did right in their own eyes, that does not mean it was right in God's eyes. So it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So we have some words that I've put in this margin for us to consider. There was famine. Now, when there's famine, is that good or bad? It's bad. And this was a famine in Bethlehem, Judah. So the place that would have been a center for the Israelites was in famine, and that's because what was going on was wrong. And God then, let's use the word, cursed them with famine. Now, it says there was a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah. Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem means bread or house of bread. I don't know if you've known that about the word Bethlehem. It means the house of bread. And so there was a famine of bread. And we know from the New Testament that Christ says, I am the bread, and he says he is the word of life. And so it helps us to understand the frame in which Joshua had been written and all these times of difficulty and people being away from the instructions of God. They were not following the right way. And so the city where there should have been bread, not only literally but spiritually, where there should have been keen and deliberate instruction of God's ways, was void of that instruction. If you look down the page, it says in verse 7, they went forth out of the place. And so it's something to consider that these things happen, that they come to this. Judah then was the house of kings. That's where the kings came from. And the reason it says Bethlehem, Judah, is like Largo, Florida. It's the town in the district of Judah. Bethlehem in the district of Judah, where the tribe of Judah was settled. And they go then to the country of Moab. Now, over in Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 through 6, is a unique thought. Dennis, could you turn to Deuteronomy 23 and be prepared to read verses 3 through 6 for us? But you see, these people of Moab were the antithesis of hospitality. They were not nice people. And so this man, because there's nothing good in his town, goes to an area not but 30 miles away, maybe 40, depending on where in Moab you go. But he goes from one very difficult situation of famine, he goes to a place where there's people that are not friendly. Are you ready to read that? Go ahead and read that for us.
Deuteronomy 23, verse 3. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the tenth generation. None of his descendants shall enter the assembly of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and water on the road when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethor of Mesopotamia, to curse you. Nevertheless, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. You shall not seek their peace nor their prosperity all the days forever.
Here's a man leaving the city where the kings were to come from, Bethlehem in Judah, and he goes to a land and a people that are cursed. He goes from a place where there is no bread spiritually and physically because of a famine, and he goes to a place that's cursed where it's just as bad for the Israelites to go. They said, don't go there. So we see that they refused bread and water for the Israelites. And after that, it was called the place, as I referring you to verse 7, they went forth out of the place. So it wasn't even worth remembering when they did leave. That's how Moab was. And so you have a people that are without direction, and they're meandering around the countryside in areas where there is nothing to help them. And that pictures a lot of people in our nation, frankly. There's a lot of people that would want to find the ways of God, but they just meander around and are not able to find what you have found. And so this book, if you look at the bottom of your sheet, not only is it a real story, but this man, Samuel, when he wrote it, he used allegory, metaphors, and symbolism. He was able to construct the story using words in such a special way because of his education. So this book has so many meanings. Now, can anybody in the room write poetry? One? I'll tell you a fact. If all of us were educated properly, we could all write poetry. But our basic understanding of language has been so dumbed down that we cannot write poetry. We don't think of the most simple thing that a child learns, rhyming. We don't think of how to put words together in the simplest things that you learn in a song. And we should be able to. Now, I'm going to plead guilty with you. I'm not very good at poetry. I have a daughter that's excellent at poetry, who studied language. I make that point because this man, Samuel, had a school. And it was called the School of the Prophets. He was not only a learned man, he was an educator. And when this man then sets his mind to write this book of Ruth, he's bringing to bear all that he can within the language opportunities that he finds presented to him in his mind. These people would memorize what they had as the Bible. And they could turn to it just fancifully and really read and or tell you what it said. And all of us are challenged to memorize one verse a week. It's a different world, isn't it? Our minds are more capable than we would imagine, and Samuel brought a lot of that to bear when he writes this book of Ruth. Ruth was an Arab. Ruth had a relationship with the Hebrew people because she was Hebrew, but she was not an Israelite. So we find into the verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Maholon and Chilion, Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. So, as I've written for you, Elimelech means God is my king. So here is a man, Elimelech, who goes to Moab, but he's able to know the ways of God and is even so named, but doesn't follow through. Now his sons, Mahlon and Chilion, one means sickness or weakly, the other was decimation or pining, sad. If you turn to 1 Chronicles 4:22, and I'll let you do that at some other point, there's a long list of names in that whole chapter. And as you note and see in note number 1 at the bottom, the names Mahlon and Chilion are actually good old Canaanite names. Now I give you some conjecture. The unusual names of both Mahlon and Chilion may have been Mays. That's why it's conjecture. May have been connected with circumstances of their births. Mahlon may have looked sickly when he was born. Chilion may have looked as though he was failing. Or their names may have been changed, indicating personal attributes. Did anybody in here besides me have a nickname? What is it? What's your real name?
Richard.
Richard. We learn all kinds of things, don't we? Larry's real name is Richard. Why do they call you Larry?
Because when I was born, my dad's best friend was a guy by the name of Larry Jones. And my mother said, if you're going to call him Larry, we're going to change his name before we take him over to the hospital. He said, no, it'll be fine. There I am.
But that's an excellent story, isn't it?
Story, yeah.
Well, it's the truth.
Yeah.
Bonnie, did you have something to add?
My nickname is Bonnie, but my real name is Charwin.
Charwin?
My mother and father had a racehorse named Winnie, and my mother was Charlotte, so they named me Charwin. But nobody wanted to call me that because of the racehorse situation.
Yeah, you're a little small to be a racehorse, aren't you? So you're Bonnie. A cute name.
A shorter name.
You see, there's something that happens with names. I'm Clint Charles Zimmerman II. My dad was Clint Charles Zimmerman. My oldest is Clint Charles Zimmerman III. So what do? They hang a shingle on me that I'm Chuck. Because Dad did not want me to be called Junior. So I'm called Chuck, a nickname for Charles, my middle name. My son is called Clint. Now that my dad has recently passed away and I've signed up for Medicare, I have to use my right name often, and it's really, they call Clint, and I look around for Dad to get up, you know. But he doesn't. And, you know, this is a thing about names. And so here's two boys, and as you could turn into 1 Chronicles 4:22, Their proper names are Joash and Seraph. But they've got these other two handles. Either it was for some reason, I just postulate or conjecture what they could have been, and those conjectures I've got from research. But just to give you an idea, sometimes things are worked with, and maybe it was something then that Samuel took license with because of what the book is about. Maybe he used the name because of the attributes that they had developed, and they were not stalwart people, and that was maybe because the one who called himself Eli Melech, God is my king, really didn't follow God and didn't look to the king. So some things to consider. Now, Ephratites are mentioned in that verse. Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah. Ephratites are from Ephrath, and that's where Rachel was buried. Genesis 35:19. And I've got that quoted. Joe, could you turn to Micah 5, verse 2, and soon I'll have you read that. But note 1.1. Ephrath is an older name for Bethlehem, because it says in Genesis 35:19, and Rachel died and was buried in the way of Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. So that shows you a little bit about how the Bible was updated from time to time when those that were authorized by our Father in heaven to consider the book and bring it forward to us for our particular use. So there was an addition there. Now, could you read that for us, Joe, in Micah 5, 2?
But you, Bethlehem, Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth has been from old, from everlasting.
Now, that refers to Christ. I think you can see that. Now I want to read to you Psalm 132, verse 6. Now this is in the Psalms, called the Psalms of Degrees, I believe. 132. Lo, we heard of it at Ephrath. We found it in the fields of the wood. 7, we will go into his tabernacle, we will worship at his footstool. So, Ephrath, that unique thing, is related to Christ, Jesus Christ, Christ meaning King. That's what that word means. Christ is better translated King in our English language. Or the anointed one. So there's a lot to be had from just looking at the names of places. Can you imagine if you were in Jerusalem and the famine had gotten you and you decided to go to some place like Iran? That's kind of what this would be like. Or if you were in Tampa, let's say, and went to Iran because there was a drought in Florida. Go to Iran. It just doesn't make any sense. But that's what this man did, and that's where he took his sons and his wife. And he was just wandering around. Now, you look at your life, and I think most of you can see that in your past you've done some wandering. I know some of you quite clearly, you know, we've had conversations. I know where you've been in life. I know how satisfied you are with the growth that you're enjoying now. And we need to remember that this book might be talking about you and me. So we come back. Let me switch back to Ruth. It's already 11:15. Oof. Eli Melek's Naomi's husband died, and then she was left and her two sons. They took wives of the women of Moab, the one of the names of Orpah and the other Ruth. They dwelled there about 10 years. Orpah is kind of a, well, very unique name. And it means, or derives its, the name is derived from the word Oroph, which means back of the head. Like the time that your mom said, "What are you doing?" and slapped the back of your head. It's happened to most of us in the room. You know, you're 5 years old and you stick beans up your nose or something like that. Your mother slaps the back of your head. She hopes they pop out. And she's irritated at you. Who did that? Somebody's pointing the finger at Dennis? He did some things. We'll just leave it there. Or to turn away. And that might remind you of Lot's wife. Now, after Orpah turns away and doesn't go with Ruth, her name is not really mentioned except for one more time. Basically, she's referred to as the sister-in-law, a relative that's over there. She's my sister-in-law. She isn't even part of the picture. See the note number 2. Israelites go into Egypt, and the household names are clear in Exodus 1. And yet, while the names of the Israelites and their tribes are mentioned, the new king forgets Joseph in Exodus 1, verse 9. In Exodus 2, slavery leaves the Israelites nameless and without identity. Moses' parents and his sisters do not have names in Exodus 2, verse 1. Only after Moses is rescued does he have a name, Exodus 2:10. Now that bears on your very spiritual existence today. You have now been recognized by God. He's called you. He knows your name. The earth is filled with a lot of people that don't know God, and God does not know them. But He promises to you a new name. And we'll get into that a bit more in a little later in the book. So we know that Ruth, in verse 4, and that name means embrace the commandments. Why there is 10, I don't know. But the 10th day is mentioned in Exodus 12:3 as to taking up the lamb, putting it aside. And we can all read on through these next verses, and I'll get to verse 22. Verse 5, and Mahlon and Chilion died, both of them. The women were left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited His people in giving them bread. And just as you might find that coming to here, there is bread. And, you know, we do have some sandwiches today for our break. And everybody's invited. We have plenty of sandwiches. So that and dessert and other things that are here, please consider yourself as invited and eat as much as you'd like. Well, they arose with her daughters. She arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited His people and given them bread. So she went forth out of the place where she was, and the two daughters-in-law with her, and they went to the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her husband's house, And let the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. So she asked them, well, just go back and hopefully God will bless you and take care of you. And so she has this unselfish concern for them that they would find success, in fact, in spite of their widowhood. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, talking of security, talking of their home, rest in your house of her husband. And then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they wept. So she says, surely, and they said in her, surely we will return with you to your people. So they say, no, but we're going to go with you. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, maybe I want kids, would I have a husband that even tonight, and then would I be able to bear sons? So don't tarry for them, waiting for them to be grown. Would you stay for them from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. So she saw that her life was not happy because God was not happy with her, and the presumption would be with the household. And this then helps us to understand that when we are a household, we should hold each other clearly in our household. And when you find someone in your household that isn't following the ways, or they know the ways, well, remind them. Verse 14, and they lifted up their voice and they wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave to her. And she said, behold, your sister-in-law, Naomi says, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. So she recognized that there was a false worship system in the land of Moab. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you. And so here is an Arab girl talking to a Jewess. Don't tell me to return from following after you, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. She was determined to follow the good example of Naomi, returning to the bosom of her and foundation of her heritage, going back to the land of the true God, and realizing that for these 10 years, being in Moab, she had been destitute of bread, physically, probably, as well as spiritually. And you look into our lives, and we come up very near to the Passover season, and I hope you can see the importance of understanding this book this way in this season. So she goes on to say in 17, where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death part us. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. This woman, Ruth, would not waver from her destination spiritually and physically. And we must be the same way. We must not waver in what we know to be God's truth. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. It came to pass when they came to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them. They were remembered. Pony Express didn't exist then, so the letters hadn't been passed back and forth. Maybe it came a note every so often by camel, huh? They said, is this Naomi? Of course they knew who she was. But she says, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. She realized that God had worked with her. Now that's important for you and me to realize, that God works with us. And sometimes some of us have strayed. We've not followed the instructions of God, and we've gone out and done all kinds of things that we should not have. And maybe it was just as simple as not following the instructions of God and not doing anything religiously. And that strain as well. That's the sin of omission, not commission. And so in our life journey, this steadfastness that Ruth had mentioned in 18 must be the solution to the problems that Naomi suffered. She says, I went out full, and the Lord has brought my home again empty. So why do you call me Naomi, seeing the Lord has testified against me? See, Naomi was here brooding. She's looking at where she had been and knowing that that was wrong. In our parlance today, we call that repentance. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. And that's the last verse I have noted for you on the handout, verse 22, barley. And it says that it was the time of the barley harvest. Barley is harvested in the Passover season. You read through the Bible and you can do your own little study on barley harvest. That's what is brought forth from the barley, from the harvest. And if you go forward, Ruth is finally given, is given by Boaz, it says, 6 ephahs of barley. That's in that verse 3:15. Now, I don't know why it says 6. Now, each ephah is 0.65 of a bushel. It's basically a 2/3 of a bushel. So she was given enough barley so that it's like 6 bushels that she put in the wrap that she had to take back. 6 bushels of grain. Can you imagine how heavy that would be? You and I, you know, if we pick up a bushel of apples, that's enough. Now, in the story, we'll find out as it goes along, usually in the day's activity, they might get half a bushel of grain. And that would be the day's winnowings from the going through the fields and collecting the extras. So we end up with chapter 1. And remarkably, it's just about the time I was hoping it would be. So we'll have another hymn.